Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. What? It's over the bar.
Hello, welcome to the RTEGA podcast. Mikey Stafford here. The Olympics is with us, folks, and bigger, faster, better, stronger, etc. And the GA Championship feels a little bit that way. It's quality over quantity this week, just four games, two in football, two in hurling. But they're big ones, and we're going to start with the football. Well, Brendan Cummins on later to talk about hurling. We're going to start with the football. So I've got Pat Splann, Mick Foley, the Sunday Times, and Rory O'Neill here with me. Is everybody well?
Good, very good. Good.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Enjoying the fine weather, lads. Long may it continue. Okay, I've got two Cortmen and a Kerryman, so I think the wise thing to do here is to start with the Connacht final, or else they'll be we'll be rowing till poor Brendan Cummins has to come in and Connacht won't be mentioned. So this is an intriguing Connacht final, Pat, from a number of point of views. I think we'll start with the venue because it's quirky if nothing else. Mayo have given up home advantage to have the final move to Croke Park so we can get 18,000 people there. I think it's 18,000. Right. But I would make the argument that Croke Park is as much Mayo's home as McHale Park, and if there's any team outside of Dublin who feel wholly comfortable in Croke Park, I would say it's this Mayo football team.
Right, let's start. Can I start with a health warning? Because look, we're trying to predict the result of Connacht and we're trying to predict the result of the Munster football final. We can see into the future. I can see into the future. No one can see into the future. If I could see into the future, I'd prefer to stick to figuring out the lotto numbers for Saturday night rather than try to figure out who's going to win Connacht or Munster. But we do our best. We base it on evidence. It's subjective. And so what? If 80% of the people will have a laugh at us, if we get it wrong, so be it.
Is this the new Spillane disclaimer? Are you going to say this before every bit of punditry from now on?
I think so, just to clear it up. But I tell you this, you know, when I started with the Sunday World in 1991, I remember the editor telling me, he gave me a piece of advice. He says, if you want to last in this business, he says, be honest, be straight. If you're predicting a match, don't say 50-50. It might be this way or it might be that way. It could go either way. Oh, jeez. Come off the fence. Say, A, who'll win it, and B, the other crowd will lose it. And that's what I've always held down through the years. I will put my fucking mouth in it and predict who I think will win. The hardest game to call over the weekend in terms of football is the Connacht final. I really do. I commend the Connacht Council for moving the game to Croke Park and that 18,000 can go in. I mean, when you think about it, and we'll get this out of the way. I mean, Fitzgerald Stadium at the moment, as we stand this morning, Thursday morning, Fitzgerald Stadium is allowed to accommodate 2,500 people for the Munster final. A stadium that has 38,000 capacity, a stadium that has the largest terrace of any sports ground in Ireland. Absolutely. It is bonkers. A month ago, we played Clare in the quarterfinal. There was 200 people. That was the attendance, capped at 200 people. You went across to the other side of town in Killarney, and Christy Moore had a concert in the INAC, and there was 200 people allowed at the concert as well. So who, please tell me, who is making up these figures? Is it a case of just fellas throw random figures into a hat and they pick out, oh, gee, lads, today, what is it? It's 500. Congratulations. Today, it's, it's a lucky one. We spin the wheel, we've got 5,000. It could be Marty. You could have Marty Whelan doing winning streak with it because it's just random. Like, pray tell me, who's in charge? Who's making up these figures? Because I don't know. Anyway, what were we talking about? The Connacht final. So, great 18,000. Good, commend the decision. And it's the hardest one of the two football games to call. It really is. I mean, if you ask somebody to name the only county with 100% record in Ireland in 2021, they'd be scratching their head and says, Kerry. Or they'd say, maybe Dublin. It's not. I mean, the only county team with 100% record in the country at the moment is Mayo. Unbeaten in the league, won every game. And like, okay, I mean, they've played two Division 4 teams, but their stats are just, I actually had to write, their stats are unbelievable. They've averaged over 33 points a game in their two matches. They've conceded just over 11 points a game. And their average winning margin in the two games is 22 points. It's some stat. So look, they're familiar with Croke Park. They have that physicality, that powerful running game from deep. They've been impressive to date. I still think I'll put in the question marks. First of all, COVID, the COVID issue. I mean, against Leitrim, they were without 12 of their panel, six who had COVID, six close contacts. So the COVID issue, how have they recovered from it? Are they going to go back to the team that they wanted to play against Leitrim, or will they stick with the Leitrim? So there's the COVID thing. That's number one. The Killian O'Connor, you're not going to figure out whether we'll miss Killian O'Connor playing against Leitrim or Sligo because there was no threat. Killian O'Connor contributed 53% of Mayo's scores last year. He's bound to be a huge blow. And the other thing I see, the difference this year and last year is that Mayo are coming into this year's game with no test at all against Leitrim and against Sligo and playing in Division 2 football. And you bear in mind that last year, Galway came into the Connacht final last year. They were beaten by a Mayo team by 1 point who fell over the line. And bear in mind that the Galway team last year had played no match in the Connacht Championship. So this year, I just have a slight inkling, a slight fancy that maybe this could be Galway's year.
Galway, it would be unfair to say that they're Connacht's Donegal in that they've kind of flattered to deceive under Pádraig Joyce. I think that's unfair. I've said it, but I mean to say it's unfair to say because he's had a very unusual start to his time as Galway manager, and he's been without key players, and you know there's question marks around Shane Walsh now. But Damien Comer starting his first championship game in 3 years against Roscommon is significant, I think, and if he's fit and Walsh is fit, you'd have to give Galway a serious chance here.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's been weird for Joyce, like, because I mean, if you think back to the first season, great start in the league, flying along, then COVID kicks in. I mean, Galway were probably one of the teams that was really affected by COVID more than any other team. Obviously, Sligo were one that was affected the most, but I mean, Galway were stopping their tracks in the league. Came back, no run in really to play Mayo in a Connacht final, which they only lost by a point. It was a pig of an old game. And they could have won it, didn't go their way, and it's a knockout championship and they're gone. Their next match back to go down to Tralee and they get absolutely scalded. You mentioned Comer. One thing that struck me actually about that game in Tralee, and it was only a small thing, but he absolutely roasted Tadhg Morley for the first couple of balls going into them. He was the only Galway player who at any stage in that game got a foothold, right? And it just kind of stuck in my head, you know, that I like what Galway are trying to do. I think it's a bit like Tyrone. I think it's a sustainable long-term approach for them, the way they want to play the game. It's a big sea change from what they were doing before. You're trying to kind of marry the pragmatism of the Kevin Walsh era with something maybe more naturally sort of intrinsic to Galway, which is that kind of stylish side of things, which I think is a good thing to do. And I think long-term, the way the game is evolving, I think their approach is actually more sustainable long-term than Mayo's, to be honest with you. Mayo are pretty much playing the same football they were 10 years ago, just with different people. So like from that point of view, it's a great opportunity for them now. They had a right good game against Roscommon. You know, it was an awful day, obviously. Roscommon sat in and just kind of hopes to kind of break Galway down. But Galway showed great composure and they showed the quality to open up, as all the best teams do when they're faced with a mass defence. They'll figure a way, they'll work it through the lines, they'll stretch out and they'll eventually break that stranglehold. And they did, and they won it. And yeah, they're going to be going in with very good momentum. Pat's right, like, I mean, Mayo have been baiting all around them. They've also been playing like a level about, well, three steps below themselves in Connacht, and probably one and a half steps below in Division 2. Losing Killian O'Connor, I think it doesn't... losing Killian O'Connor never meant they weren't going to win a Connacht. It means they will not win an All-Ireland. But I would still have a fancy for Mayo only on the basis that their style of play is so familiar to them, and their personnel and all the rest. Like Galway have had a big overhaul in personnel from last year. And I just think it might be a bit more stability. But it's your classic Will Galway bait Mayo scenario again, you know. It's kind of, you know, you could say Galway by three and you won't be much far wrong than say Mayo by three, you know?
Yeah. They have kind of got a style of play going now, Rory, haven't they, Galway, in that you know, they're very happy to sit deep if they have to get men behind the ball, as they did against Roscommon, as they both did. It was almost like a staring contest at times. But then you see, you know, you're reading the match report and you think about it, you say, oh, Jesus, Paul Kelly linked up with his brother Sean a bit there. Sean got a point. Sean set up the goal. Sean's playing cornerback. Like, you know, this is kind of the way they're playing now. They're kind of, it's defensive when it has to be, as all the best teams are. But when they attack, there's 14 men who can attack for this team, it seems.
Yeah, well, I think in fairness to Park Joyce, he probably had to introduce a level of pragmatism to his coach and philosophy. Obviously, he came in and he was looking to try and, you know, play all out attacking football. But ultimately, that is not very pragmatic in the best sense. Like you do have to try and get the balance right. But I'd probably go along more with Mick insofar as I watched the two Leinster semi-finals yesterday. And Croke Park is a different... Football is played differently in Croke Park. It's just different. It's a different kind of game. It's faster. The contact isn't as... you're not getting into the hand-to-hand stuff as much. And I think the athletic team, the team with more pace and more energy, will probably prevail, especially now given as well that it is expected to be warm again. Now, one of the things that's impressed me most about Mayo is they've quietly regenerated and quietly reinvigorated the team with lots of youth, lots of enthusiasm. Pat mentioned like the numbers that they're running up. And I think like they've been kind of sheltered away in Division 2 to a certain extent. But I think that probably suited them as well in terms of rebuilding the panel, because obviously the Cullen Boyles and Donald Vaughns and all these guys and Jamie O'Shea's, they were all coming to the end anyway. And I think maybe that little year in Division 2 has probably helped blood a lot of these young lads coming through. It's probably, you've seen the likes of Maddie Ruan and these guys step up now into leadership roles. And Killian O'Connor is going to be a big loss. But I actually have a strong fancy for Mayo on Sunday. And I have a feeling they could go deep into this championship, and I mean very deep. Now, will they again?
I can't see that, Father.
Yeah, I know.
There's only two games after.
I could see this particular Mayo team giving Dublin fierce trouble. I really could. Now, they'll obviously have their work cut out to get over on Sunday, and I'd have a strong fancy for them. I actually think
the only thing is, Rory, you know, when you talk about the simple rule of thumb for predicting championship matches is that the team from a higher division will probably beat a team from the lower division. There's 23 championship matches played already this year. And would you believe it or not, only one team from a lower division have beaten a team from a higher division. That's Wicklow beat... Wexford beat Wicklow. That was the only game. So this actually Sunday is a Division 2 team, Mayo, playing a Division 1 team, Galway. And you cannot underestimate the difference. Actually, by the way, while we're on the championship, isn't it absolutely crazy that after next Sunday at 6 o'clock that we have 5 football matches left in the championship? Mm. It is just the speed in which we're running off this competition this year is an absolute joke. Yeah.
There's only 4 hurling matches left. There's a big difference, and I keep saying it. There's a big difference between running your championships and running them off. Run them off, you know.
It is just terrible. I mean, I cannot understand as a football supporter. I cannot understand how the football counties allowed that they didn't have a backdoor. The football championship, of course, should have had a backdoor. Mm. With a bit of imagination and a bit of thinking outside the box, it would have been sorted out. But getting back to Galway, and the one thing I like about, I look at Galway and I look at Tyrone. Tyrone went down to Killarney and got an absolute hammering. Galway went down to Tralee and were beaten by 22 points. But you know what? They're learning from it, because I know the next couple of matches, I thought you could see, You could see it with Tyrone against Cavan. You could see it against Tyrone. Pragmatism takes over. Right, okay. This gung-ho attacking policy, it doesn't work. Dublin don't do it. Kerry don't do it, even though we like to pretend they do. They don't. You have to have a defensive structure. You have to have a defensive plan. And since that debacle down in Tralee, Galway defensively have been quite solid. They've been well organised, and they're starting to get the balance right. What I like about the Galway team this year is that the youngsters, Matthew Tierney, Rob Finnerty, the two Kellys, there's a bit of There's pace there, there's exuberance. These are natural footballers. And like I said, I know Comer has been out of it, but Comer, I mean, you look back at last year's Connacht final, and the only scoring threat came from Shane Walsh in attack and Paul Conroy midfield. They had no support. I mean, this year now, you have Finnerty, you have Tierney, you have Kelly. They're going to add support. So Shane Walsh was a bit of a one-man band last year. He has support this year. That's why I would I put money on Galway? No, but I just slightly fancy them.
Well, they're back in the scenario again now, Galway, I think, where it's looking like they're going to win an All-Ireland before Mayo. Now, Sunday could be the breakout day for them. It could be. Could very easily be. We could be sitting here next week going, Jacobs, you know, Galway have made the move now, you know, and they're in the last four, and let's see what comes next, because, you know, they'll have had a game in Croke Park if they do win on Sunday, which would be significant for them. So we'll see, like we'll see. It's an issue, and the Division Two versus Division One thing is significant.
Oh, it is, yeah.
I think the Monaghan game will stand as well in lots of ways, but it's just to me. Just the reason I'm edging towards Mayo is just purely that stability. The thing about the knockout championships the last 2 years is that it is favouring, certainly last year, it's favouring the teams that sort of have, that kind of have a bit of, they have their setup, you know. They've had their setup in place. They know their players and they're driving on, you know.
Yeah. Okay. We'll move on to the Munster football final. Blowing the rather.
Do we have to?
We do. I promise, Pat. It was the only reason we come on. Cork are back in a Munster football final. It's two long years for Kerry since they've been in one. Mick, I'll start with you. Can you, as a proud Cork man, make any case for a Cork victory here?
Of course.
Go on then.
I have to make one. I thought I could just say yes and move on.
No, I want to see your work.
Well, look. We all know the numbers. Like 26 years since they won down there. You know, last
John Bruton was Taoiseach.
Sorry.
John Bruton was Taoiseach, and Bill Clinton was president the last time we won down there.
Good God, I can tell you, I've never ever seen Cork win in Killarney ever. Child. Boy, man, whatever. I've never seen Cork win a game in Killarney. So, they're going down. I was thinking about Killarney a lot this week now. Like, they've played 14 times down there since 95.
Had a few draws, yeah.
Five draws. If you look at the results down the years, particularly in the last 5 or 10 years, Cork have only taken a hosing maybe once. Like the last time they were down there, they lost by maybe 3 points or something like that. Now, what usually catches them in Killarney traditionally is an awful slow start, and then they're chasing their tails. The one thing I would say that no matter where Cork are in the pecking order, and we have a little bit more evidence of this now during the backdoor era when you had the likes of Mayo and Tyrone going down to play in Killarney as well, nobody, and I mean nobody, makes a better fist of playing Kerry in Killarney than Cork do. No one gets as close to Kerry. Go back and look at the results. No one. So, like, on that basis alone, doesn't mean they're going to win, but it means that they have the capacity to make a right game of it. And we know from last year.
As much as you can hope for.
Everybody will talk about the Mark Keane goal. Everybody talk about the Kerry performance and so on and so forth. But Cork, you only win those games in the last minute. And I'm not going to say as Pat well knows, because that would be very harsh. But you only win those games in the last minute if you're still in the game in the last minute. Mm. And Cork were in that game in the last minute. So credit for credit's due. They've had it. I would also argue, if you're asking me to make the case, this is me making the case for Cork and Killarney. I think they would have got promotion from Division 2 if it was a normal season. They were getting, they lost first game and they kind of left them behind the eight ball a little bit. They were getting running. I wouldn't take any notice of the Limerick semi-final whatsoever. I'd say they're cooking up something different for Sunday. If the injuries will hold them back, Killian O'Hanlon's a gigantic loss.
Massive.
He looked like a player who was coming through. From the Kerry perspective, my concern for Kerry is that they have learned, I'd say, the square root of nothing this season so far. Because, like, I was at the Galway game, I was at the Tyrone game, I was at the Clare game. They look fantastic. They look like I think I was on here before and I was saying, you know, every single run, every single tackle, every single movement is a message at the moment to themselves above all that they're serious about what they're doing this year and they're a farm team in the country. but they just haven't been put up against the wall yet and asked, what are you going to do now, lads? And I mean, I was talking to someone there this morning and we both agreed, like, the first, how things are in this game at the first water break will be crucial. If Cork are still in the game after the first water break, who knows? Who knows where Kerry's heads will be and who knows what happens next? So that's my case for Cork making a show of it rather than themselves in Killarney.
Pat, five.
if that's the case, the jury isn't going to be out long on this one.
I thought I gave a very nice knack-lock style speech, I think, as good as well. Your Honour.
I think Michael Foley's client is heading for the gallows, if you ask me. Let's see. So, I mean, there's two things there, but I mean, in fairness, listening to Michael.
Here he comes.
Listening to Michael give his case was a bit like some fellow, some advocate for the Flat Earth Society, you know, saying. And I know then, when my alarm bells start ringing, when I hear a Cockman saying, and I quote, my concern for Kerry is. There isn't that.
This is what we have to put up with now. This is what we have to put up with.
There hasn't a Cork person that was ever born that has any concern for Kerry. I can tell you this without fear. And I know it. Look, Michael, I was never involved, by the way. I was never involved on a Kerry team that was beaten in a last-minute score by Cork.
Absolutely right. I was actually very
lucky that in my first 11 Munster finals as a player, Jesus, I won them all. I was on the winning team. It was absolutely great. I just have to say this about two things. First of all, about what should be on a person's bucket list, the wish list in the world. Number one is a visit to Skellig Rock. Okay? Spiritual, surreal, spectacular. It's an out-of-body experience, right? It's words can't describe. And the second most magical experience that I would say words can't describe, to be standing on the terrace in a packed Fitzgerald Stadium at 3:25 on a July Sunday afternoon.
It really is.
The green and gold, the 40,000, the green and gold, the red and white, the programme sellers, the smell of the burgers, the Kerry and Cork teams parading behind the Mill Street Pipe Band, and you look out over Killarney Town, St. Mary's Cathedral, and you look out into Killarney National Park and you say, this is heaven. This is as close. Kerry Cork rivalries. Look, I used to remember Ambrose O'Donovan and like the biggest rival, and it's not as bad as it used to be. It's still there on the board. But I remember Ambrose, and I played with Ambrose O'Donovan for 3 years, and Ambrose like was on the board. I think some of his land was inside in Cork. But anyway, when it came to a Munster final against Cork, Ambrose was like the Incredible Hulk. Lou Ferrigno, he transformed. He was into a green monster. That was the day he was hyped up. That was the one day he wanted. And I always remember as a player, because I taught in Bantry for 35 years, you know, the only time that fellas that wave at you along the road or flash lights, or fellas that would meet you at the shop in the morning, the only time they'd meet you is either A, Cork had beaten Kerry, or B, more likely, Kerry had been beaten. Celebrated with fellas who never spoke to me in my life would speak to me in the morning about, what about the game? And I mean, like, it's a sort of catch-22 for Kerry people because on the board, the regions, like money-wise, and Kerry like their money. So if Cork win a Munster final, it's the biggest night of the year in Rathmore and Giddy Willow pubs because all the Cork crowd come over to it. Kenmare is the same, where my neighbouring town. I mean, if Cork win a Munster final, Kenmare have their biggest night of the year. Oh, it's absolutely huge. If Cork lose a Munster final, I swear to God,
Ghost Town.
Lewis Hamilton.
There are cars driving over each other on Kenmore.
Oh, jeez, you couldn't get out faster. So look, a Kerry Cork, what a shame. I mean, what a scandal. 2,500 or whatever like that. And there'll be 20,000 people around Killarney Town next Sunday afternoon in the pubs and in front of the big screens. Oh, it's just crazy. But look, it's a special day. It's a special occasion. What a pity there aren't more people there. Look, last year, I was ridiculed because for the first ever time in my life, I had a gut feeling Kerry won't be beaten. I really did. And I'd normally be a little bit huge. I'll throw in a small if in. But last year, and I have my headline here, you know, and I'm in social media. Everyone has a laugh as Pat Smilan's pre-match Cork versus Kerry prediction backfires. And the headline, and my headline was, oh, jeez. The headline was, Clifford and his colleagues could have a field day. I don't give a prayer. I don't give Cork a prayer.
Pat's disclaimer at the start of the podcast is beginning to make sense.
And the gas part about it, was that everyone, all the Joe Brawleys and the Mark O'Shea's and the Diarmuid Connolly's, there was a lineup of fellas criticising me and saying, have you left me? The gas part about it was, there was no one that predicted Cork to win last year. But anyway, that's your lift. And do you know what I've said to the Sunday World? I said, lads, use the same headline again this year.
Can I ask that one very quick question? I know you're caught for time. Yeah. Can I ask that one very quick question? I was actually doing a bit of research. I can't remember what it was about, right? But I came across an absolutely fabulous picture of Pat as a very, very young man winning a novice county title with Temple Knoll back in the early 70s. And it just got me thinking, because you were in the same, weren't you,
Pat? 73.
That's right.
Or 72.
You went to school in the same, didn't you?
Correct.
When was the first time you would have played in a big game in Killarney? Or what was it like?
Fitzgerald Stadium is the most magical place to play because it's. I played in Munster College's finals there in 72 and 73. I was a sub for Kerry in the Munster Senior Football Final of 1974. On one side of me in the subs bench was Mick O'Connell. I mean, geez, when I think about it, that's 47 years ago. And Cork beat us. And Cork hammered Kerry the same way. But I always remember the Kerry County Secretary coming over to Mikko. And Mikko was one of the greats of the game. And he said to Mikko, you're coming on. And I remember Mikko saying to the Secretary, he said, look, he said, put on a young lad. I'm no use to you. Now, he did go on, but I thought it was fair enough. But it's the most magical place. I mean, it's a footballer's pitch. Yeah, it's a footballer's pitch. It's just like when there's 35, and I mean, in those days, there was 40,000 plus, green and gold, red and white. Oh, geez. If you couldn't be inspired by everything about it, like it was a footballer's pitch. It wasn't a place to hide. That's why, was it you were saying, Rory, or whoever was saying earlier on, you know, Clare came down to try to defend for 70 minutes on that pitch, and like the last 5 or 7 minutes they'd blown up and Kerry scored 2-3. So it's special. It's a special place. It's my special place. And you know, the annoying part about it, out of all the years I've been working with the Sunday game a long time, I've never been at a Munster football final either in Páirc Uí Chaoimh or Killarney. I've been at about 6 Munster hurling finals talking about Connacht football matches or Ulster football matches. But anyway, no, a special place, a special day. What a pity we can't have more people in.
Okay. We'll have to let you go, Pat, on that note. We'll get the comments in here.
Just before we go, though.
By the way, I think Kerry will win.
Yeah. I'd be very worried about it, to be perfectly honest. I think, and I hope Mick is right in that that Cork can certainly try and make the game competitive. But I think, look, if Kerry... If what happened last November doesn't stick in their craw and they don't come out with a bit of a vengeance, I'd say we'd be under a bit of pressure early on, and that's it. The game could get away from Cork very, very quickly. I've seen Cork go down to Killarney with much...
Rory's taking a different approach here. But genuinely,
I have seen Cork go down to Killarney with much, much better teams than the one we're sending down there this year. Yeah. And not come out with a win, or certainly, and on some occasions, you know, get beaten or get beaten well. So I'd be a little bit worried. I know the bookies and all that, like the spread is 7 or 8. I think Kerry could beat that. And yeah, you're just fingers crossed for a one big performance, but I don't see it, unfortunately.
I was going to let you off there, Rory, and not make you talk about it. I thought you might prefer it.
We have to be realistic, Mikey. I'm already, after Pat threw my case out there, I'll be working my heel for the next day.
I thought you were going to cry there, Rory. That would have really sealed it.
Don't give him the satisfaction.
Well, do you know what? The one thing I will say is, however bad things might get on Sunday, there is a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, because I think what's coming up through the ranks there, there's plenty coming.
You're underage. You're in good shape. Pat, enjoy your Munster final and the Connacht final, but especially the Munster final. And we'll chat to you again soon.
Lovely. Good to talk to you.
He hits it. It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses.
Welcome back. Brendan Cummins has joined us to talk about hurling. Pat's gone off to jump in the sea and cool down. I think he's fired up for the Munster final.
Which he does every day.
Yes, twice he told me. Really? How are you, Brendan?
I'll go, Jack. Great. Yeah. Catching our breath here in Tipperary after last weekend, but looking forward now to this weekend's second round qualifiers.
I know you wish you had a seat to jump in after that weekend of hurling.
Yeah, it was a bit like that, all right, yeah. We weren't long about sitting down after the standing ovation at halftime going in, but such is the way hurling is. And I think all the teams this weekend and all the managers, whether it be COVID or whether it be we're 7 or 8 points up, we learned the lessons of what's happened last weekend. There's no doubt about that.
Certainly will. I always think, Brendan, this time of the year, momentum can count for a lot. And you'd probably say Waterford aren't coming in with a massive amount, given the nature of their win. You know, not doing Leash a disservice, but, you know, kind of rotating a few players, etc. But Clare came through a real battle that, you know, a game they kind of had to win twice, which is never a bad thing as long as physically you're okay after. Whereas, you know, Cork have been sitting on their hands for a while now. So to me, this one looks like it's kind of a little bit, it's Cork's potential versus Clare's momentum.
It is, and I think Cork will have to win the fight first before they win the hurling match, because Clare are bringing unbelievable aggression and power back to what we'd have seen in the good old Clare. They're really showing that a manager, I suppose, can put their stamp and character across the team. You look at Aidan McCarthy, look at Conlon. You're going to have to turn those players backwards before you can start to play yourself, and that's the big one for me with Cork. I think if Cork can think outside the box on the puck outs, if you think about it, Clare would play the sweeper. That means that Coleman will be sweeping as well. I think it's no harm if Tim O'Mahony goes up the pitch under the puck outs, under the Cork puck out, playing wing forward. Because remember, he's got a defender back there to help him. So that might be a way of helping Cork to win more of their own puck outs if they can use the wing backs in that way. And that, I think, might give them a foothold. But unless they can do that, the way this Clare team are playing, they'll steamroll out over the top of them, because they have genuine momentum now, especially after that Wexford game. I know you said they win it twice and all. Made a couple of errors which brought Wexford back into the game, but I was impressed that they had the composure not to panic. They've learned from the Tipperary game and they just saw out the match in a mature way.
Yeah. Brendan mentioned him there. Aidan McCarthy is just like, where's he been all my life? He's an incredible half forward, just like he's in that kind of Limerick half forward mold of like he's a big man, he wins his own ball, and he's just, what was it, 3 or 4 points from play last night, but they are of the absolute highest quality. And when you have a guy like that showing up, you can play Tony Kelly midfield. Why not keep people guessing on what you do with Tony Kelly? Because there's actually, you think without Tony Kelly in there, it has to be Aaron Shanahan, but the last day it was McCarthy, and he was wonderful. Like he was just so influential.
Yeah, he's been knocking around there for a couple of years, and you know, he's certainly making his impact this summer. And you know, look, it's kind of obvious to say it, I suppose, but you know, when Tony Kelly has a quieter day like he did the last day, and Clare still getting a result out of it and getting what they need from the rest of the team, that's huge. My one question about Clare, and it's not really a question about Clare as such, but it's just the emotional, physical, mental investment of last weekend. It would have been massive. And it's no surprise, like, I mean, look, we saw it in the Tip Limerick game, you saw it in the Clare Wexford game, in the conditions, these big leads can swing. I just wonder where Clare were at this week. You know, when did they come out of that sort of post-game fatigue? You know, when did they sort of come around? Obviously, they're going to have huge momentum. And it is on Cork's plate to match that. It's on Cork's plate to, I suppose, the thing that would have always been discussed throughout the Cork hurlers last couple of years, and you can see it in the stats, you can see it in reality. Work rate has been an issue, winning out dirty ball and getting in among teams, and as Brendan said, winning the fight before you win the game has been an issue for Cork. Whether they can do that or not the next day is again huge question. So it may well be that if Cork don't bring that, well then Clare will be okay. I suppose what I'm saying is, if Cork do bring that, and if they do get under Clare's skin, will Clare have just the energy? You know, I mean, this is punishing stuff now. I mean, this is, you know, it's unprecedented temperatures we're dealing with here, and for a lot of lads, you know, at this level of hurling, I feel sorry for them having to go week after week. To be honest, Cork haven't had that, but at the same time, I'm not even sure how much work you can do in training in this kind of weather. My understanding from a Cork perspective is they've done a bit, but they're not going to be doing a whole lot, like, you know.
Yeah, Where do you see it, Rory? Because Cork, obviously, they did a lot right against Limerick and they got quite a lot of praise for it, but they still lost by, was it 8 points? You know, we're talking about a Cork team that, you know, you've got some hope for. You've got a forward line that people see as the match of any in the country, but, you know, they gave a good go of it, but they still lost by 8 points. And now, you know, they've been sitting around for a few weeks now, whereas Clare are putting notches on their battle axes, aren't they?
I think, to go back to Brendan's first analogy, which I think is absolutely spot on, the fight has to be won first and foremost. And I think from the Limerick game's perspective, the big issue for me was it always looked like a heavyweight against a middleweight. I think what you're going to probably see with Cork versus Clare is two teams more or less at the same weight division. I think from Cork's perspective, that'll give them some hope. They should be fresher. They've only played one championship match as opposed to Clare, who've played three. Now, look, that does give you momentum. Is Cork season going to peter out with a sort of a limp enough display in the end against Limerick and then lose to Clare and effectively after basically cat-farting around the league as well? Is that going to be the sum total of Cork hurling's year for 2021? I'd be shocked if that was to happen. I really would. I do also think that Clare half back line, I would have questions about it. I'm still not 100. I know John Conlon picked up man of the match the first day out against Waterford, and he was excellent. You have to bear in mind it was a weakened Waterford side, and they didn't have that same energy at the likes of Jamie Barron running up the middle at him, which he would have had Barron been fit. So I'm not 100% convinced about Conlon at centre back, and I think he's going to get a fairly stiff test, because I thought Harnedy did look like he was returning to form until he took a ferocious belt in that Limerick game. So I think that I'd be interested in Brendan's view, like, on that Clare half back line. Is that a potential weakness from a Clare perspective? But I think it is a 50-50 game. And if I was to kind of pin my colours to the mast, I think there needs to be a little bit more want in Cork this weekend. Because, like, for them to effectively have their season encapsulated by two sort of championship defeats to Limerick and Clare and then disappear off the scene is almost unthinkable, certainly from the management's perspective.
What is that, Brendan? It wasn't John Conlon's greatest performance for Clare or in his short career as a centre half back. But what do you make of that triumph there, Dermot Ryan, Paddy Fitzpatrick with Conlon in the middle?
I think Fitzpatrick, I don't think will start the weekend. He probably will name him, but I'd say McInerney will go in there. The rumour is around McInerney is that he's not shown enough fizz in training, and he's not shown enough. So that's why Lohan hasn't trusted him to date. But I think he will have to now after the last two performances. But Clare, I think, have realised that, yes, the half-back line isn't 100% brilliant, so that's why they've imposed the sweeper. And the real thing then is that Malone will sit back, Galvin will sit back, Ian Galvin will come out around the middle and buzz around. But I think that then leaves space on the Cork 45. I think that's where Cork can really get a foothold in the game, because Cork's game is all about getting an overlap and a wave up the pitch. So that starts with the energy levels that they should definitely bring to the game, considering the history of the last year and a half in Cork hurling. They have a fair point to prove here now. And the Kingston model with Donal O'Grady, we're all singing the praises during the league, will be definitely on the ropes if they don't win the weekend. So it's all on the line now for Cork. And that's why I think when push comes to shove with Farrell inside and all, Cork, I think, might have that little bit too much for Clare the weekend.
Just a note, Mick, I'll put this one to you. Talking about, Brendan says McInerney hasn't been shown enough fizz in training. David McInerney is a farmer. I'd say it's fair hard to do a day's farming in this weather and then go hurling training in the evening and have any kind of fizz at all. To be vertical, I'd say, is an achievement, to be honest.
And I'd say in the modern game, what happens there is you get in somebody from Farm Relief and you put your feet up. And that's unfortunately where the thing is at now. Bobby Ryan did it years ago. Babs had it sorted out for him. It's the way it is now. If you're not 100% all in and there's chinks in the armour at 3:30 on Saturday, nobody cares. You milked 1,000 cows before you're down and played the match, or you had your feet up all week. When the lights come on, you have to perform. If you don't, you lose and everyone jumps on top of you.
I was actually going to make the exact same point on Farm Relief. Yeah, that's what happens. And I mean, Kilkenny would have been I can remember last 20 years ago telling me about how they arrange things. You know that they
Noel Hickey.
Same, like I'm sure he's out and about a little bit, but like, look, I think it's, you know what it is. It's a real sliding doors moment now for these two teams. This game, because I mean, if you get through this. I think the road opens up a little bit.
Oh, it does. It opens up big time, Mick, because, like, let's be honest, the chances are I would have a strong fancy for Galway in the other one, which means that you're playing Dublin then in a quarter final, whoever wins on Saturday, you know, and it's a very weak in Dublin. We know what's going on there between injuries and COVID. So it is a major carrot there.
Well, huge credit does need to go to, I mean, you know, huge. And again, Brendan mentioned it there, kind of, you know, a manager putting their own stamp on a team and putting their own identity on a team. I mean, Clare have been hugely impressive really this year also. I found them, certainly in Championship, been very good. They were very good and obviously very good last weekend. So tuned in from the get-go. Their work rate is immense. Like, they're clearly all playing for each other. They're pulling the one direction, which in normal circumstances you would say that's good enough. That's good enough to keep it going. Now, my concern for them just is that weak turnaround and that sort of emotional thing. If these guys are just playing each other after a couple of weeks break and all was well, I would be leaning towards Clare. But just there's something in me, and like Rory says, be a lot for Cork now just to kind of just to leave it behind like this. If they were just, you know, in a fairly kind of just lost in the middle of the summer sort of an exit, you know.
Especially what you also have to pockmark this with is there is again, and I know, look, that's tomorrow never comes. But the under-20s won a first under-20 title 2 weeks ago. And then this year's batch went up to Thurles on Tuesday night and, you know, hurled tip off the field for the last half an hour. Obviously, we're 6 points down at half-time. So there's a lot of players coming. So for the senior team to limply exit the Championship on Saturday would be a massive setback and it would be a big blow. And I think it would be, it would put the management under a bit of pressure too, I wonder.
Yeah. Well, I think we're probably more likely to pull the curtain down on them. Like, I mean, and the thing about, and you're, it's a fair point about all the other games that are going on, but for the players in the senior group in Cork, now is now,
yeah.
Your next game is your biggest game. So they need, and they've had a break. It's going to be a very different challenge to play in Limerick. And they'll have to come with a different way of doing things. What Cork are about is that they do seem to be trying to do things slightly different to other teams, in terms of the way they hold on, just the way they play. I think they're more of a kind of a, if they get a sniff of a goal, they'll go for it, you know. And I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that. I'm not so sure that's the case with the other, maybe some other teams that are around their level at the minute, and that might just I don't know. I just have a feeling Cork are going to bring something this weekend. I've a bit like Cork in the football. I can't really put my finger on quite. Why? I mean, in that case, I was just making a case for Cork performance, not win.
I know.
Put my finger on why I feel Cork are going to win this, but I just, you know,
it's not just you two. It's not just Cork people who kind of been expressing this kind of opinion that Cork's need is greater or Cork's want is. Brendan, I wonder, like, how much stock can we put in need and desire in the modern game? If Clare's eye is in. They've got momentum. They've won a couple of games. They're playing for their manager. You know, they've got 4 or 5 scoring forwards. You know, they've got, let's say McInerney comes in and plays well. They've got their defence shored up. Does want and desire really have that big an impact in the modern intercounty game with how professional things have gone? Like, surely the better team, the better drilled team, the team who are in better form should win the game.
No, not necessarily. I think read between the lines. You always hear Cork people and they'd always say, if we show fight, and there is no doubt that Cork have the ability and the skill to win an All-Ireland in 2021. The question really is, are they prepared to put their head in where you wouldn't put a hurley?
Yep.
Are they prepared to get a belt? Are they prepared to get up and go again and go again and go again? And that is really the question. And I'm listening to the lads there. All you hear is do or die. They have to. It'll be all over. It'll be, you know, they're bust if they lose this time. So because the backs are to the walls like that, and I remember with Eamon O'Shea 1 year, he lined us up on the wall when he was manager. And he said, there's nowhere you can go now from here only forward. And I think that's what's giving Cork people hope now at the moment. Patrick Horgan the last day wasn't great. I think in the words of Tom Brady, he'll have laser focus the next day, which will give them an extra 4 or 5 points of a push. They will have to be out of their mind frantic with the game plan that they have to get over Clare. And I think that backs to the wall thing will mean that they will be frantic, and that will give them enough. Ability is never, ever, ever in question with Cork. It's just, are you going to bring the fight? And it's an insulting thing to say out loud, but it's just what we've all been saying for 2 or 3 years. So let's see now the weekend if it can happen.
Okay, that's interesting. The other game you could probably, you can make a similar argument, Mick, about Galway. At least they need to bring a fight, because not doing down Dublin, because I watched that game, I was covering it for the web, for the RTÉ website, and Dublin were immense. They were aggressive. They were tactically spot on. They took their chances. So this isn't denigrating Dublin in any way. But Galway were a bit off. They tried for a couple of goals early on, which smacked a little bit of, if not arrogance, at least a little bit of a casual nature that shouldn't have been there. Yeah. And they got well beaten. And again, so they've been stewing on that, and they must have been stewing on that, and Shane must be stripping paint off the wall. But they're coming up against the Waterford team who, you know, were similarly flat against Clare in a lot of ways, but now they've had a bit of a tune-up, and so they've probably got a bit of their confidence back. And again, it's the same as with Cork. How much can you do in training? How much can Galway right their wrongs in training to go in against the Waterford team who are still depleted and missing, you know, their goalkeeper, their centre-back, and their key scoring forward from the last couple of years? But they have that little bit of match practice and a little bit of freshness.
Yeah, I think there's enough muscle memory in Galway to know where they need to be at. You know, they know, you know, even if they only have had training since, you know, they know where they should have been at the last day. I mean, the Dublin, I think they definitely underestimated Dublin. I mean, and you know, as you say, I mean, Dublin's attitude on the day was excellent. Even last Saturday night, it was covering the Leinster final, and again, you know, Dublin, in all the circumstances, and okay, they took a bit of a trimming in the end, but they didn't take as much of a trimming as they could have done. And it was credit to them that they held their ground when the game, well, even more so for me anyway, even when the game was gone from them, they held their ground, and they looked a proper team, great attitude about them. So, like, if you don't, again, it's kind of obvious thing to say, if you don't come into a game with the right attitude, you're at nothing. So, like, that was probably the case to a degree with Galway. It's a useful wake-up call, but, like, again, it could be such a costly defeat to them going down the track if they win again if they win against Waterford, and where that takes them, that defeat to Dublin puts them in a tricky spot. But anyway, I don't think, like, Waterford, to me, what I've seen of Waterford, they just don't seem right. And I mean, it's partly for those reasons you mentioned. They don't have the depth. They, you know, like a lot of teams, kind of flitting around kind of in behind Limerick, someone just don't quite have the right level of depth at the moment to kind of withstand, and certainly the kind of losses Waterford have had, could have gone the last day. The fair play to them, they got it together for in the last quarter to close out the game against Leash and get there. And again, bit like Cork, you're right, there could be one massive kick in them, like, you know, they're not, you don't, you know, you don't go from an All-Ireland final to disappearing out of nowhere just like that, and they'll be conscious of that. But I just feel that Galway almost have even more to prove the next day, and that personal sort of sense of responsibility almost with among players who did not play well or did not play the way they would have wished against Dublin, and maybe feel they took their eye off the ball or whatever. You would imagine, again, layers of focus, I'd imagine Galway would come through that.
Yeah, there's one, I haven't done the numbers on this, Roy, but another fly in the ointment potentially for Galway is they don't have the best of records in Semple Stadium, I believe. I think much like Wexford, they're not a team who enjoy playing in the home of hurling particularly.
Yeah, like, and I think their record against Waterford can be quite sketchy as well, Brendan, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. You know, they've struggled with Waterford in the past. So I'd say they were the team that everybody was depicting as the team closest to being able to physically and just to have the sort of full rounded package to be able to take Limerick on. And I can't see how they'll have gone bear in mind, I actually predicted Waterford to win the All-Ireland, but that was before injuries and everything else kind of
You forgot your Pat's bland disclaimer, Rory. It's no good after the fact. You get it in there first.
But I just think from Galway's perspective, like they were flying through the league. How much can you weigh on the league? The league was just a bunch of glorified challenge matches. But I saw them below in Parky Cueve, watched that match in full against Cork, and I was expecting something from Cork given it was the last game. And I thought Galway hurled really well. I thought Mannion was outstanding, arguably the hurler of the year, certainly the foreign player in the country at that time. And just the kind of flatness that was in that performance that they gave against Dublin the last time, there's no way they're going to do that again. I just can't see it. And I think it could be a good game. But you'd have to expect Galway, even with Semple Stadium and Thurles being a factor. And look, they have hurled well at times down there. It's not their favourite venue, I'd imagine. But I just think they'll have enough for Waterford in this occasion. Just, I don't know, is Conor Prunty back fit? I think he is. Hopefully he is in his perspective. So that'll definitely bolster the Waterford full back line in the centre. Because that was big problem for Waterford was effectively they lost the spine of their team. And you take the spine out of any team, you're going to be in trouble. Yeah. But they've managed to reinsert a few of those. Éire Le Daily's gone in there. Obviously, I think Jamie Barron is back now as well. So, look, I think it'll be close and it'll be tight. But, like, you wouldn't be surprised to see, you know, this one go right to the wire. And but I just think that Galway will have a little bit more to prove. And, again, similar to Cork, if their championship offering for 2021 amounted to a terrible defeat to Dublin and limply exiting the championship to Waterford, that wouldn't necessarily go down too well, I would imagine, you know, and I think they'd be under a bit more pressure and hopefully that'll bring out the best in them from their point of view.
Yeah, not just because we have you on, Brendan, as a former goalkeeper, but I have heard a good few Waterford people kind of saying, look, Tadhg Na Bearca is missed. He's a wonderful hurler. He really was the marshal of that defence. But the absentee that's killing us this year is Stephen O'Keefe. I've heard a lot of people say that like he probably wasn't in the conversation of top two or three goalkeepers in the country before he went, but he's like, you know, death is a great career move. There's an awful lot of people talking about his importance to that Waterford team now. And has Sean O'Brien nailed down the starting spot, or is there still a little bit, you know, is that a little bit up in the air that they're still maybe toying around with other options?
Yeah, I think it's become a feature, I suppose, of the modern game. We see it in TIP where teams haven't locked in on their goalkeeper. Murphy seems to be locked in Galway. And sink or swim, I think you have to maybe give a year or two of teething problems. Barry Hogan with TIP did very well the last day. But certainly, yeah, O'Keefe's experience is absolutely massive. And like if Prunty's inside at full back, like he knows that when the ball goes over his head that Stephen is going to be there. Whether we like it or not, he wouldn't have the same relationship with any other goalkeeper that goes in. So when the ball goes over his head, he's thinking, oh, I hope now that they've caught it behind me. So, yeah, and I think the other big loss, obviously, and it's been said a lot, that the managers like Derek McGrath's managerial career with Waterford hit the rocks because Tadhg Na Bearca got injured. Padraig Fanning only got Tadhg Na Bearca coming back from injury. Mm-hmm. Liam Cahill rode the Tadhg Na Bearca wave last year, getting to an All-Ireland final, then he gets injured. And it's no coincidence that Waterford are back in bother again from there. But certainly the goalkeeper is a huge part of it, especially on the puck outs and the confidence that Stephen O'Keefe gives. But I think from a Galway point of view, we spoke the last section about Cork, and we said, would fight mean that much? We saw what fight meant when Galway didn't bring it against Dublin. And you could see it a mile away after 5 minutes that they were off the pace. But who's going to play centre-back or full-back? Are they going to play around with that? Are the quad of the Cooney's going to do? Will Conor Whelan be playing midfield, stroke, wing-back, the best full-forward in the country? I just think they got it structurally completely wrong the last time. This time, I think they won't. So that's what makes me think that Galway this time round will have enough. Because if Whelan's inside with Con Cannon and Joe Canning floats in and out playing two or three inside every so often, they will cause some bother to Waterford now if the ball goes in.
Yeah. If it does transpire and make the Galway, they get up for this and they manage to win, it's a very disappointing season for Waterford then, isn't it? Having been All-Ireland finalists and obviously scuppered by injuries and withdrawals and stuff like it. But, geez, there was an awful lot of promise. It's a terrible way for the year to go for them because, like, they showed so much last year, and Rory wasn't the only one. Rory's not a madman. He wasn't the only one saying, geez, if Waterford get things right this year, this could finally be their year.
Yeah, like it's very frustrating for them. I think, I mean, my feeling often on Waterford is, and I mentioned it there, you know, the depth issue, you know, sometimes at Waterford, and particularly operating over the Munster Championship as well, things are often on a knife edge at Waterford in that regard. You know, a good result can lift, you know, rising tides. Man, if you lose first round like they did, it can throw you back in a couple of injuries. And, you know, it's always tough for Waterford in that regard. Of course, it will be hugely frustrating to get to an All-Ireland final and the next thing, Nick, and the following year, your summer is kind of cut adrift in the middle of nowhere. But, I mean, again, it wouldn't be, it's nowhere near throwing baby out with the bathwater time or anything like that, you know. It's just, the flip side of it is, of course, if they win on the weekend, I mean, well, then it's a really serious statement about where they're at again. So, look, it's just a sense I have again. I just don't think it's a sliding doors moment. Like we mentioned sliding doors moments for Cork Clare. I don't think this is a sliding doors moment for Waterford in any way, shape or form. It's just, they've been unlucky with injuries and they came up against a Clare team that played well first day out. And as I say, to me, they just don't have that depth and that sort of, I don't know what's the word I'm looking for. Seasoning is the wrong word, but that sort of just stability all the way, always, that they can kind of lean back on, you know. So, you know, it's a lot of times the Waterford is on a knife edge. But I would have no doubt, I mean, if come next year again, all things being equal and hopefully back to some kind of normality, that Waterford will be right there again, you know.
Yeah, it's something to build in as well, lads. Before the Waterford played Laois, they were supposed to have a wicked heavy week of training. Mm-hmm. We saw it during the league that Liam Cahill knew when he could get his team to peak. We saw it against Limerick. We saw it against Tip. Now, he nearly got caught last weekend, but he didn't, right? So I think if you're Galway looking at Waterford's result against Laois, I wouldn't be reading a huge amount into it, other than they got over the line. Because there is a fair push coming from Waterford. Like I said, they did have a heavy batch of training, according to what I hear. Players were a little bit tired. They took the chance, got away with it. But now they will total freshness for this Galway game. So I wouldn't read into the Laois results. But there has to be a big kick in Waterford as well. And we've had the same conversation about Waterford and Galway. Whoever loses and they're out Sunday or whatever, it's scratching the head time. And that's what we want in our championship. It's harsh, but it makes it exciting.
How much value, Brendan, though, 2 weeks out from, we'll say, your biggest championship match of the year, because it's obviously you're heading into straight knockout now. How much value can you actually draw in a physiological sense from putting in a bank of training like that? So, you know, like, would that have any material benefit to, you know, to flog lads that close out to championship?
Well, I think what Liam Cahill's philosophy is, and we saw it the tip under 20s and 21s, is mental strength. That you run. And when you're finished running, I'm going to take out and I'm going to run you some more. So that when you get to that point in a match where you need to use that running game, you're so used to doing it that your kind of resolve has been tested. You're not broken. Yeah. It is. It's like that army camp, like, you know what I mean? That if you can't do it, go home. And like, he does that with the players. I know the rumblings around Waterford where he's run them too hard. He's trained them too hard. I don't know, is there such a thing as going that too hard part once you have the buy-in from the players, and he obviously does. So we'll see the weekend now if that philosophy works, but he is building and wants to build a bunch of dogs is his thing, and the hurling will flow from there. And he had that mentality in Tipperary and got success, so why not give it a whirl now in Waterford? And who's to say Sunday or Saturday evening, Sunday evening, that we'll be all saying it was a master stroke, you know. That's the cut and trust to management.
Okay. He was also quite, if my memory serves me right, he was quite critical of the players after the Clare game as well, which kind of feeds a little bit to this, like, that, you know, my sense of Waterford with Cahill is that it's not entirely a throw your arm around you kind of environment. Like, it's either you're here to hurl, and if you can't hurl, there's the door. And if you can't stay at the pace. So you go out and you do a bank of training like that. As Brendan says, it's a mental, are you here? Can you withstand what's coming and what we're doing here, you know? So like that, they got it. If the case, they got away with it, and they could be in a good mental state. But again, comes back to that. A lot of times in qualifier and backdoor teams and hurling and football, it comes back to personal responsibility and this kind of sense among the individual player sitting at home on his own, thinking about things around the bus or whatever it is. I don't want my season to end here. I don't want my career to end here. In some cases, You know, there are certainly some guys out there that are looking down the barrel, and that can deliver performances as well. So, but yeah, that's a very good point actually. That you know, Cahill has put it up to the players now, in every, physically, publicly, probably, and mentally, then by extension. So let's see now.
Yeah, I don't think any of us mistook Liam Cahill for an arm around the shoulder kind of manager. He doesn't seem like that kind of guy at all. He seems. Yeah, and maybe, you know what,
that's tough
probably
love, exactly tough
what
love.
Was, probably what was needed, because they'd with Derek they probably had the absolute opposite before. Thanks. So you know, there's probably a need for a change of focus or whatever.
Well, like I said, just like, I mean, guys don't get to that level of management without being able to make harsh calls and say hard things and deal with things in their own way. But obviously, look, it's like anything in life; it's a mix, you know, isn't it?
Sorry, It's probably also important to say that when we speak about managers like Brian Cody or Liam Cahill or Liam Sheedy, how tough they are, and they're this. Like, I've been on one-to-ones with players, and if you're not respectful to a player, you can be tough all you like, and they'll just say, do you know what? Now, you can take that and you can stick it, and I'm not going to bother my arse. But they have a lovely way about them. They have great emotional intelligence, I think, is probably the key, is that they can look the likes of Austin Gleeson in the eye, who can be like a firecracker if you want to try to manage him. If you close your fist on him, it explodes. But if you can give him a pathway to success and drive him towards that, then they will all do it. But if you're acting the clown as a manager, and that's how they lose players. So just to temper it, that while they are all ruthless and all that stuff, they also have respect and they know how to get the best out of these players. And that's how they bring along with them. And that's the key to all the good managers like Liam Cahill as well.
Yeah, it's our old friend buy-in, isn't it? You know, if you put the structure in place and the guys can see that this is going somewhere, you know, they will respond. And absolutely, yeah. I mean, just to reinforce, yeah, like when we're talking about guys not being armed around the show, I'm not saying they're like, you know, kicking them around the place, renting like that. It's just their way of getting through to them, and they know the buttons to press at this stage with these things.
All right. Look, they are two fascinating games for a lot of reasons, as I'm looking forward to them. You can hear commentary on them on RT Radio 1, and we'll have live blogs on the RT Sport website and the news app. And the two provincial football finals are live on RTE. So we have you well covered.
The first one, just it might be worth make mentioning of the fact that we're starting on RT 1 for Connacht football, and then we flick over to RT 2 for the Munster football final, just in case anybody gets confused. And
they're there watching Olympics. Beach volleyball, thinking this doesn't look like the Connacht football final.
This is meant to be Killarney. What's going on? You know?
The Olympics are on, for anybody who's not aware, on RTE2 for now, for the next 2.5 weeks. Okay, lads, thank you very much for joining us, and thank you to Pat earlier, who's probably back from his swim by now. We will catch you all again next week. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. There's the whistle. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
What I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it! He hits it!